Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure. Bonjour.
Oh gosh. Zoe heard bonjour from the back of the house and started barking. She thinks there's like intruders here from France.
The French are out to get
C'est
us.
C'est French! I sincerely apologize for my French accent. I think it is the worst of my accents.
Oh, mine's even worse than my British accent.
I know, like, a few words in French, and I'm typically okay at accents, but I never learned French, so it's probably not great.
The only things I can say in French is, Je m'appelle Olivia, parce que tout je déteste mon vie, il pleut.
What is il pleut?
My name is Olivia, was the first part. Because of you, I hate my life, and then il pleut means it's raining.
You told me about the second one.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah.
Let's see. Bonjour, merci beaucoup. Omelette du fromage. Thank you, Dexter's Laboratory. Do you remember that episode?
Hot take? Okay, not really a hot take, but
You weren't a Dexter's Lab kid?
I hated Dexter's Lab growing up.
I loved Dexter's Lab growing up.
He annoyed me.
I don't know why. I really like Dexter's Lab, and I really like Dee Dee.
See, she annoyed me too. Both of them annoyed me.
I loved Dee Dee.
I was like, he's a stuck-up know-it-all, and she's an idiot.
Growing up, I don't know why, as an oldest sister with only brothers, I always identified with the sister character whose job it was to make their brother's life just a living hell. So, like, DW from Arthur? Mm-hmm. Yes. Icon. See, absolute favorite.
I was the youngest sibling, so maybe that's why I didn't identify. I don't know. I don't really have, like, a good handle on why I don't like it, other than, like, I just found them annoying.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Kyle has briefly joined us.
Sup?
We have a, as you saw on Instagram, if you go on Instagram, we have a lovely French charcuterie board ahead of us, and since the pizza's not getting here for 2 hours,
it's Friday night.
I'm stealing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle came down here and just started, like, nomming on the board while we were talking.
Kyle has pillaged the palace and stolen all of the luxuries that we were keeping.
What are the poor people called?
Beggars?
Proletariat?
Yeah, proletariat!
How did I think of proletariat, but you said beggars?
Can we just talk about that happen? That was the most, like, bourgeoisie, like, obnoxious thing I could have said. What are the poor people called?
Let him eat strawberries, blackberries, and
Ritz
crackers.
A little baked brie.
Let them eat Ritz.
Peace.
That's the most American response. Peace, dude. Oh, also, one of our lovely little cheese boards has one of those little, like, knives on a hinge, and I turned to Liv and said, oh, look, it's a little cheese guillotine.
It really is.
By the way, we're watching Marie Antoinette.
If you couldn't figure that out.
We'll get into the movie later. How are you doing this Friday evening?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad it's Friday.
I am too.
I'm kind of over the work week, so yes. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be enjoying this immaculate vibe.
Yeah, it's a pretty vibe. And I will explain the vibe momentarily, but also the vibe this week is some really good but really cheap champagne.
Yeah, like, for the price, this is really good.
Champagne and strawberries is the most vibe we could possibly have.
This is, like,
movie.
I feel so bougie.
Yeah, that's what you have to feel going into this.
This makes me feel like a rich person putting strawberries in my champagne.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's... I don't think there could be more of a vibe than this. Unless we had, like, a whole plate of, like, patisserie in front of us.
Yeah.
That's about the only other thing we could do.
Fam, we went to Kroger instead of Publix, and we goofed.
That was the mistake.
Yeah,
Publix, Publix had the macarons that would have really, like, stepped up the game.
It would have stepped up the game. It would have. Yeah. Or they have the little petit fours or whatever.
Yep.
Petit four. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have little cakes. We do have white chocolate macadamia nut cookies.
That look incredible. I haven't had one yet.
They taste delicious,
too. We also have some sunflower honey that's very good.
Really good.
But, interestingly, the, like, semi-fancy, semi-cottagecore vibe here will actually very well fit with a part of this film.
Okay.
So, I said I would explain the vibe. We are watching Marie Antoinette from 2006. Directed.
Did it come out that long ago?
2006.
Damn. We're 15 old.
15 years ago. And I had a panic attack when I realized that. Because I was like, yeah, I remember seeing this in middle school. And then I realized I was in middle school 15 years ago.
I mean, hey, Lord of the Rings is turning 20 this year. Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah, that's scary. So I guess just like I'll go into the vibe later, but shall I run Le Film stats real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
So
I'm gonna eat some cheese while you
excuse me while I pull it up. As I said, it was Sofia Coppola, directed or came out in 2006.
She is related to Francis Ford Coppola.
She is his daughter.
Okay.
Yes. The reviews for this film are mixed, I don't even say mixed to be, like, polite. They truly could not be more mixed. With a 57% tomato score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 56% audience score, which I think is interesting because a lot of the movies that we watch on here, they kind of go one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
They're either something that, like, critics loved and audiences hated or vice versa.
Right.
Or just everyone hated.
Yeah.
And this one, they're kind of both in the middle.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what to think or how to feel about it.
Like, it's not fresh, but it's almost there.
Yes.
You only have to get a 60 to be fresh, right?
I'm pretty sure. I know it's lower than a 70. Kind of the mixed reviews for this film are really fascinating to me. This film premiered at Cannes. Mm-hmm. I think is it Cannes Film Festival? No, it's Cannes Film Festival.
I think. I don't know.
I don't know how the French say it. I've already said I can't do French accents. I'm sorry. This starred Kirsten Dunst as Marie Antoinette.
This is our second Kirsten Dunst. Is it Kirsten or Kristen?
I believe it's Kirsten. I believe it's K-I-R. Yes, K-I-R-S-T-N.
Kirsten. This is our second Kirsten Dunst film.
It was because she was in An Interview with a Vampire.
She was.
This movie also has Jason Schwartzman, who I actually really, really love. He plays Louis the 16th. Rip Torn. I never remember this guy's name. Steve Coogan. I always just call him the Roman guard from Night at the Museum. And I never...
What is his name?
Steve Coogan.
No, the guard.
Oh, the guard? Oh, gosh.
It's like Tiberius and... No.
It's something really cliche. I know... I literally just call them the Roman and the cowboy, and I'm referring to Owen Wilson and Steve Coogan.
I just call them, like, from... the gay little ones.
Yes.
From Night of the Museum.
That is basically what they are.
I ain't quitting you.
And there's, like, a lot of other... character actors in this, Molly Shannon, Shirley Henderson, who I'm pretty sure was in, I'm wrong. She was not who I thought she was. The girl who's the mean girl from Bridesmaids. I'm looking her up right now. What's her name?
It makes me anxious in that movie.
I don't remember what her part is in this movie. Rose Byrne. It's an interesting cast. And I think Kirsten Dunst was a very specific casting choice because she was very popular with younger audiences.
She was kind of riding high in 2006.
She was riding high in 2006. Mm-hmm.
Was this pre-Elizabethtown?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know when Elizabethtown came out. I think she looks younger in this than she does in Elizabethtown, but I might be wrong. The only way I can describe this film is aggressively Sofia Coppola.
Oh. Sorry, Elizabethtown was the year before this.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. I will say this film does a very good job of... They never age Marie Antoinette in a way that looks corny, but they definitely can make her look younger or older immediately with a costume change.
Yeah.
This did win the Academy Award for Best Costume Design. Mm-hmm. You will definitely see why. They are beautiful and stunning. And
I remember watching that Oscars, mm-hmm. and I don't remember the name of the costume designer, but when she stood up to accept the award, I was like, ah, like everything made sense. Uh-huh. Like, I just remember, I don't even remember what she wore, but I just remember thinking that it was like so avant-garde mm-hmm. and chic and over the top mm-hmm. and like everything at once. And so I have actually seen this movie,
mm-hmm.
but I've only seen it once. I was kind of young. I was very sheltered. So like all the like sex scenes and stuff, I was like, oh my, like, yeah. You know?
I remember seeing this in theaters with a friend and being like, oh.
Yeah.
Because I was still at the age where I couldn't pick up hints that people were going to have sex. Mm. And so when she does, I was like, oh. I just didn't get it. And didn't get any kind of complexity with the adultery that's in the film.
Yes. And see, I think as a kid, I didn't like it because I was just too young when I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember the whole time feeling like I shouldn't be watching it.
Mm-hmm. I had the feeling, I was like, oh, I'm glad I'm not watching this with my parents, mm-hmm. but I didn't ever feel like I shouldn't be watching it. So before I go into my experience with it, some critic things. The reason why the film seems to be controversial is that at least among critics, I think some audiences were just totally confused by it. But among critics, it is the people who don't like it think that it is not critical enough of Marie Antoinette and the French court at Versailles,
okay.
Which I will give my own thoughts on as we go into it. The people who do like it understand that it is a biopic and character examination of Marie Antoinette. A couple quotes I thought were interesting. Leah Rosen from People magazine wrote, "The absence of political context upset most critics of Marie Antoinette, and called this film a featherweight follow-up to Lost in Translation." And I think featherweight might be appropriate in some contexts. But I think the one that I like best came from Roger Ebert, who I think we've quoted more than anybody else on here. He stated that every criticism I have read of this film would alter its fragile magic and reduce its romantic and tragic poignancy to the level of an instructional film. This is Sofia Coppola's third film centering on the loneliness of being female and surrounded by a world that knows how to use you, but not how to value or understand you. And I did just take that straight. Both of those came straight from Wikipedia. I did not research this extensively. But when I read that, I got it. And I think Sofia Coppola explores the plight of womanhood. However, she does always explore it from the position of privileged white womanhood. But that kind of makes sense because in many ways that is where she is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it still has something to say about our treatment of, or history's treatment of women in power.
Mm-hmm.
and especially for a woman who grew up in such privilege and such a bubble that there's no understanding of the plights of the real world. And I do think that's kind of an interesting thing to explore, especially with the tone of, you know, modern pop music and Kirsten Dunst. I actually really appreciate she doesn't try and do a British accent in this. She just has her American accent. She's just playing a teenage girl forced into a position of ultimate power with a limitless credit card. And we see what that does, and it's kind of this, well, of course that's how it plays out. So, as far as the not being critical enough of, the court at Versailles, I think that that's not what this particular movie is exploring. And if I have a criticism, it's that there really aren't a whole lot of works that do explore it. But I don't think that devalues what this particular film is, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, I don't know that much of the history here. I know a little bit more about Louis the 14th than I do Louis the 16th.
I'm the opposite, weirdly.
Okay. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of the French Revolution was basically that Louis the 16th was a young king with not a lot of experience. Marie Antoinette was a foreign woman who was shipped off to France to marry this new king.
When he was still the Dauphin or the prince. He is not king when they get married.
And my understanding of the historical aspects. So I know Louis the 14th was pretty popular, but is it not that, you may not know the answer to this, but isn't it the case that like Louis the 14th and 15th kind of, in the same way that like modern presidents a lot of times get like blamed for an economy that they inherited?
That's what happened to Louis the 16th in many
ways. Like, it's not that he is completely clean of the situation. Like, as a leader, he should have done something to make it better.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, he was basically a child who was trying to figure out how to, like, handle the situation.
Yes.
And didn't know what he was doing. And because of that, like, policies from before his time ended up biting him in the ass.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I grew up very fascinated with both Versailles, excuse me, hello champagne, Versailles as a place of like, you know, culture and decadence and intrigue, but also with the French Revolution, both its politics and the Reign of Terror, and the governments that came into power after the Reign of Terror. I was really fascinated with just that whole period in history, largely because I, and we've talked about this before, because my mom showed me The Scarlet Pimpernel when I was young, and I was suddenly very...
I love The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Very intrigued with that part of history. And also growing up, I remember I was in middle school when I read one of those royal diaries books, and it was Marie Antoinette, and I literally picked it up because I thought her dress on the cover was pretty. And then suddenly I was so fascinated with just, because it mostly dealt with her life in Austria, and then the very final chapters were when she went to France, and just so fascinated with this life where everything was dictated to her. I mean, she had, for someone who had so much power,
she had no power
to have no agency whatsoever, and to live this life of glamour, but to really truly not have a connection with her husband, to not know or even be respected by the people who she is with in court and reigning over in her country, and but she's such this like powerful personality.
It almost reminds me of like modern day celebrity.
It is. That's exactly what this is a commentary on.
Like so many modern celebrities, particularly women, have like so much pressure on them, and like they simultaneously have so much power and so much agency, and then have like none.
Yeah.
Because everything they do is scrutinized. So there's like not. They can't just be free to like make their own decisions or live their own lives. Like they're constantly trying to like live up to this expectation.
Yeah, and you and that is posed very well here, from like the all of the ceremonies that happen like in her bedroom with like her and her husband getting into bed together, to like her getting dressed in the morning, and there's like 20 women in there, to people coming in and getting the privilege of watching them eat breakfast. Like, she lives in a fishbowl. I said that the charcuterie plate is interesting because it also addresses how she gets her own vacation home, basically. Like her little, where she sets up her little cute little quaint farm, and she invites her ladies out there, and she dresses as a milkmaid, and very much like trying to popularize like, oh, this lovely romantic, the farm life is so relaxing. And of course she has no idea
how hard farming is
or how hard it is for the people outside of I believe it's the Trianon is her little like vacation home within Versailles.
That being said, living in like a modern capitalist society, I'm like, maybe she was onto something.
Oh, she was totally onto the cottagecore. So there's like a whole portion of this film that's all about her living her cottagecore dream, and as opposed to like the glitz and glam of the rest of the film. And the costumes transition with it so well. And it's so hard because like you know the historical context of all this luxury, but this film is like, yeah, but this stuff is beautiful, and it's, you cannot deny that the palace is gorgeous, the costumes are lovely, the Trianon and her little cottagecore life is just idyllic, and the film shows that for what it is. And I think that's why a lot of people had issues with it, is that when you're so surrounded by that beauty, you don't get the criticism.
And I think the thing about wealth is I don't think it's inherently evil, but like I think the problem comes when you have extreme wealth and then you live your life in a way that causes other people to suffer. Like Jeff Bezos, horrible man, has so much money, and yet his employees are treated like dirt, and he's terrible to them. Like, if he reduced his salary just a little bit, like, his employees could be making bank, and he would still be one of the richest men in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like if he created a company where his employees were treated super well, and, like, feeding into, like, the economy. I mean, they do feed into the economy, but, like, if he... But not as much, right? Because they don't have the money to spend on, like, luxuries and stuff. So, like, if he was, like, investing in his workers and living this opulent lifestyle, I don't think anyone would care. I think it's this opulence without compassion for those who have less than you. And it seems like, you know, somebody like Jeff Bezos, he knows that his employees make dirt. They make nothing, and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Somebody like Marie Antoinette, my impression of her is that she's, like, oblivious.
That's definitely the route that this film goes. And they show parts where she's trying to do like little things when people are telling her about like, hey, you know, the treasury's running low, and she'll have, you know, these moments of being really like trying to be really thoughtful and cut back on things. But then every night she's partying and gambling.
Yeah.
So, you know, the film doesn't frame those scenes always as the best critique of her, So I will give it that. I think I would love to see a film made about Marie Antoinette that wasn't from someone who's in her shoes. Mm-hmm. But like the comments said, this film is very much about being a woman, mm-hmm. and being objectified and made into an icon and an image rather than being seen and valued and understood as a person. So I get what it's going for there.
And, you know, something that I think that's important to consider is that, like, to this day, it's 2021, and to this day, there are people who know Marie Antoinette's name and don't really know that her husband is Louis XVI.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was the one who was actually in charge, mm-hmm. and yet she's the villain in our history books.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interesting reasons for that. She was very easy for, like, French cartoonists to make fun of, and there were all sorts of, like, totally sexually explicit cartoons of her out there, and so this kind of myth of her as this whore queen has also solidified her as quote-unquote infamous in the public consciousness.
She's a woman and an immigrant, so mm-hmm. it's like the French, it was like xenophobia and misogyny kind of rolled into one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Marie Antoinette definitely deserves some criticism, but I don't think she deserves the amount of criticism that she gets.
Mm-hmm. I think the concept of the court at Versailles as, like, a system.
It's, like, so bad to begin with that, like...
But what's so interesting is the one film I've seen with, well, aside from, like, is Musketeer stuff Louis the 14th or earlier?
It's usually 14th.
The only other film I've seen with Louis, I believe, the 14th.
Sometimes it's earlier.
Yeah.
Depends on the film.
The only other film I've seen with Louis the 14th was A Little Chaos. Did you ever see that film?
Mm-mm.
I need to rewatch it. I didn't know how to feel about it at the time. But it's a Kate Winslet movie, and she is the designer and planner of the gardens at Versailles.
Mm.
And Louis the 14th is played by the late, great Alan Rickman. It was one of his final roles.
Oh.
And you love him. So, you know, there's really very little that is critical of Versailles until we get to Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just because they lived in this time of extreme opulence and splendor. Mm-hmm. And there's something that even to people who are rightfully critical of it, there are people like me who are like, but it's so pretty, and there's intrigue, and it's so fascinating, mm-hmm. and fun, and I wrestle with both of those things, but I think that having the understanding of it, and coupled with the understanding of the French Revolution,
mm-hmm.
and both the positives and negatives that came out of the French Revolution, are interesting to explore. It's also interesting that this movie goes out of its way to show that Louis the 16th aids in the American Revolution. The American Revolution is mm-hmm. actually a big part of this.
Mm.
And
all these Hamilton songs just come flooding back.
Wouldn't that be great?
I saw it on Sunday. The Fox.
Oh, that's right!
It was,
I forgot!
Super good!
Oh,
the guy who played Hamilton, though, he was like a really good singer and like a like meh rapper, which to me, like, he was too poised. Like, mm-hmm. Hamilton needs to seem like he's
being
like
messy.
He needs to be like one step away from manic the entire time. Like,
he needs to be like, I just got out of a rap battle, but I'm ready to go. Let's do another one.
If he's not like shaking with anticipation, then he's not doing it right.
Yeah.
Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, like, is not an amazing singer, but he's fucking, like, it's like he's like watching like a puppy. And I feel like that's the right energy. So
I agree.
Yeah, but the production was super good.
That's good.
But yeah, I this whole time I've been sitting there with the like, should we honor a treaty King Louis said?
Do whatever you want. I'm super dead. So yeah. I guess I will tell you. You know, there's gonna be costume porn. Part of why we set this up, because I feel like this is undervalued in this movie. This movie has magnificent food porn. Like, as much as, you know, this film was praised for the costumes, the food in this looks incredible. Ooh. And again, it's that, like, it looks so sickeningly sweet. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, the people of France are starving, but that strawberry patisserie looks so good. And I, oh, it's good. So I'm really happy that we have this food here. Because if we were watching this and not eating, I would have a problem. So, apart from those two things, what are you expecting?
So I'm expecting to adore the costumes. I know when I was little, and I saw this, the two things I was thinking, I was very much, like, this, like, snobby purist at the time, and I was like, why are there Converse in this movie? It's not historically accurate.
I love the Converse.
Yeah, but now I feel like I'm gonna be like, hell yeah, Converse, Chuck Taylor, let's go.
Hello, 2006. Middle school me.
I feel like I'm gonna be a little bitter the whole time because I'm not living my cottagecore fantasy. Mm. Like, I feel like this movie is gonna make me want to, like, join the revolution and call for Marie Antoinette's head.
This movie is a combination of cottagecore fantasy, but if you're like me, so my aesthetic is royalty core.
Is that the pizza?
Oh,
that's... I got here earlier than I thought.
That's sudden. Hello, Zoe. Zoe greeting the pizza man.
Here, give me the dog and you grab the pizza. I'll hold her, you grab the pizza. Sorry, fam. They said it would be 2 hours. We were like, we have time to record.
We apologize.
They were like, it'll be 2 hours till your pizza gets here. We're like, cool, we have time to record.
Totally have time to record.
30 minutes in.
But that's okay. You were just telling me things you expected. You said, pretty costumes.
Mm-hmm. I expect to be jealous. I expect to like the music a lot. I'm expecting to enjoy it much more this time because I have, like, the nuance of being an adult woman.
The critical eye.
Yeah. I'm totally down for, like, you know, the modern bits that made their way into the film. I just don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. Literally, the only time that I get offended is when there's, like, unrealistic corsetry, but that's just because, like tight-lacing corsetry can be, like, dangerous, and so if there's this unrealistic expectation, people can, like, mm-hmm. try it in real life without having, like, the practice and knowledge. That's literally the only thing that ever makes me angry.
I don't think this film is guilty of that, actually.
Yeah.
So
I feel like, I mean, this was a time period where, like, full body corsets were more common, you know? So I'm down. I don't care that there's Converse in it, you know? I don't care that they're listening to, like, 2005.
I want candy.
Yeah, I don't care that they're listening to, like, 2005. Wait, it's not the Aaron Carter version, is it?
Oh, I don't remember. But I know I Want Candy is in this movie. Honestly, is it bad that I kind of hope it is?
I hope it's the Aaron Carter version.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
I loved him. I love him still.
Poor Aaron Carter.
I hope he is well.
He's not well.
I hope he is doing as well as he can be.
Bless his heart. But yeah, so I'm expecting to like it a lot.
Okay.
I'm expecting to just want to, like, run away to a garden somewhere when it's done. Mm.
Well, I hope that is the case.
So, yeah.
All right. Shall we?
We shall.
All right. We are watching.
Is there, like, a French,
like... Oh, I don't know. I don't know how they cheers.
How do you cheers and... I don't know. Cheers.
I hope the ringing... Hold on, wait. We can do better than that. Hold on. I muffled it. Yeah.
Marie Antoinette.
Go.
that. I get why I didn't like it when I was a kid.
Yes.
It's a little artsier than I remembered.
And I remember this being marketed for like as a cool teen movie.
Yeah, and then, but it's actually like, kind of like high art, like indie film.
Yes.
I really enjoyed it.
Good. Okay, so let's start with if there was anything that you didn't like about it or your thoughts on the criticisms of it now that you've seen it.
Yeah, one thing that I didn't like, so, and I know you thought he was yummy. I don't like Jamie Dornan.
Oh, I don't like him as a person or even that much as an actor. I just said at one point that, like, even though I feel that way, if a man that good looking were like, the pleasure is mine, madame, I'm like, oh, darn it. That would work on me.
I don't think he's that good looking.
I think his face is very pretty.
His face is pretty, but he also kind of looks...
He does weird stuff with it.
Yeah,
though.
Like sometimes he just like is sitting there and he looks like he smelled a fart, and I'm like, what's wrong with you?
By the way, I can't believe I didn't say Jamie Dornan in the beginning, but he was not high billed in this cast.
Even though he has earliest movies,
it probably was. Even though he has a fairly important role, not like a big role, but he plays Marie's lover. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I will say, I said in the beginning that I love Louis XVI in this.
Yeah, he is a cutie pie.
He's a cutie pie, and I think the guilt of cheating on that man would consume me.
Yeah.
But you also understand that she's been forced into this, like, passionless marriage with a very, very nice, wonderful man. But yeah. There's nuance here.
Yeah.
Not to justify the adultery.
No, but I do get where she's coming from. And I think when I was little, I was like, how could she cheat on her husband? And now I'm like, I mean, they were 15 when they got married. Mm-hmm. They didn't choose each other. Like, I understand, like, the commitment was made for her. Mm-hmm. So while it was still wrong, I'm like, I get it, you know? Mm-hmm. But I just don't like Jamie Dornan. I don't know. I like. There's one point. Hardy's in this movie for like one scene,
right?
And he's like butthurt that she chose.
But he's so much cuter.
Yeah, he's like. How could she choose Jamie Dornan over me? And I'm like, right?
I thought the same thing.
I'm not even that big of a Tom Hardy. Like, I like Tom Hardy, but I don't think he's that attractive.
Yeah.
But between the two, I'm like, yeah, Tom Hardy. No, all day, every day.
I completely agree.
That was the thing I think I disliked the most. What else, if anything?
Watching it now, there was one thing that I thought, which was... I won't say it's a... pacing issue, but this movie goes through periods of a lot of dialogue, and it's mostly her, like, I like that this movie kind of simulates the eavesdropping on chatter dialogue. Like, very little dialogue is all direct and clear. You're like listening to things in the background. We had subtitles on, which I was glad of. But I don't know, the beginning is so heavy with that, and then you just go through these periods of long silences.
Yes.
So the movie focuses very much on the first half of her life and then just kind of like rushes through a lot of stuff at the end. So yeah, sometimes it was clear they were trying to address big historical things as well, but they were very rushed. I thought all the conversations about giving money to America were necessarily short, but they were also like awkwardly short because you were watching these like big important decisions of state being made in a really short time.
I was actually okay with it, because to me it kind of built into this idea of her being oblivious. Like, these things are going on in the background, and it's like, give money to America, and she's like, woo, party! Like, you know, because that's the thing. I think what this take of Marie Antoinette, and again, I don't know... Obviously, like, we don't know who she is. Like, we don't know her personally, but my impression has always been that she wasn't malicious. She was just in a bubble and kind of, like, oblivious.
Yeah.
You know, so...
But I think that could have been... if we wanted it to just be from her perspective, we could have had it... had that information be conveyed through her perspective. But we don't. We get little moments with Louis that I really enjoy, and I was very fascinated with, and I almost would have liked to see a movie from that focused with him as the main character, just because he's just kind of a fascinating figure in this. But that's neither here nor there. I don't think it's a necessary change. But
yeah.
So tell me about the things that you did like.
Oh my god, the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, the wigs. The shoes. Oh my god, her, like, some of her dresses were, like, just jaw-dropping.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole cottagecore bit, which she and her friends are wearing, like, straw hats with, like, white linen dresses.
Yep.
Was everything I've ever wanted.
Yep.
I cannot stress how beautiful this movie is. The cinematography is stunning. The colors. Yeah. Like, I love how bright it is. And then in that one scene where she goes out to the mob, how, like, the whole movie has been, like, soft pastels. And then that one scene is so harsh.
Yeah.
And she's the only thing pastel against this, like, bright red and orange and black. And it the contrast is stunning.
Even the contrast between Versailles for most of the movie and then the period when her child dies and she's losing favor with court because, you know, she's Madame Déficit and, you know, all of these things are happening. Even the contrast there when it gets very dark, I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And then you have all these dark scenes, but when they're leaving, it's this, like, they're leaving at sunrise, and I think the exteriors of Versailles, as well as the interiors, were used brilliantly.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, Francis Ford Coppola used... It, you know, when we were watching Dracula, like, some of the scenic shots are just stunning. And I think you see kind of the legacy of that here with Sofia Coppola and how she directs this film. I mean, it just... You feel so present in Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
And Versailles itself is almost a character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the way that she was able to bring it to life really speaks to her credit as a director. Like, say what you will about this movie, it's beautifully directed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you don't like it, cool. But you can't say it was poorly directed. Like, it's just, it's beautiful.
I agree.
So,
No, I agree. And I think she was very cognizant of the casting, not just making, like, you know, oh, Kirsten Dunst is popular, let's get her, but all of these figures who, I mean, the characters are essentially caricatures. There's not really any subtle performances here.
Right.
I think Kirsten Dunst's performance can be subtle at times, but it's really not about that.
Yeah.
It's really about, you know, the performance of being in court.
Mm-hmm.
And think the most subtle performances we get are all the moments when she's alone.
Yes.
And then you can tell that it's being well directed because she's not playing off of anyone else. The director just said, this is the conflict. Mm-hmm. Go.
I will say this. There was one scene. I thought Kirsten Dunst's acting throughout the film was really good, except for one scene. When she finally breaks down and cries, I didn't believe it.
I agree. There weren't a whole lot of real tears there. It's not the best part. But you know what scene I do love? It's before that. It's when she gets the letter from her mother talking about, like, your brother and sister are happily married.
Yes, and she just, like, sinks against the wall.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. For the most part, I thought it was beautifully acted. It was just that one scene felt fake to me. The rest of it, I never questioned whether or not she was Marie Antoinette. She felt naturally in the part. That was the one scene where I was like, okay, like, she was told to sit in a room and cry. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, it was just very fake sounding to me. Oh, goodness.
Was that your stomach?
Yeah, it was my stomach.
Was I right or was I right about the food porn?
Food porn, though, was hardcore.
There are shots of, I don't remember, like, Dupontiac, whatever her friend's name is, like, with her bright red lipstick and her diamond earrings, like, stuffing a pastry covered in whipped cream into her mouth, and it gets all over her nose, and I'm like, it's in the I Want Candy shot that we're getting, like, shoes and wigs, and
I really liked that sequence.
I love it. I love it so much.
This definitely, I will say this for this film, this is not like a movie that I'm gonna watch just for funsies whenever, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, this is a movie that you watch for its artistry. You have to be in the right mood for it.
It's not, excuse me.
Yeah, you have to be like looking for, you know, either the detail in it and really thinking about it, or you just, like, you just want to watch a beautiful movie.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Trying to think if there's anything else I didn't like. I thought the performances were all pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I did have one other thing when I watched it this time. They have one piece of music that's not one of their... I actually really like all the pop songs, and I'll kind of ask your opinion on that later. There's one piece of music that I felt like they played, like, 500 times to show, like, that her time at court was, like, mundane and pressure, but, like, I felt like I heard it 500 times. It was the... Like, every time she was sitting at breakfast, they played it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God. But it did make me appreciate the moments when pop songs came on a lot more.
I think maybe it's just because I didn't know what was coming. Like, I didn't notice that music so much.
What did you think of the pop soundtrack in the back?
I thought they really worked for me. And I kind of like to me, the pop music felt like it was, like, distinct from Versailles. Like, there's the culture of Versailles, and there's Marie Antoinette's culture that she creates within Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're engaging in the court, it was very, like, formal music, and then it transitions to her partying with the pop music, and that worked for me. I liked the juxtaposition. I thought it was fun. You know, I don't know that there was, like, you know, I don't really have, like, a grand, like, thing to say about it, where it's like, oh, like, yeah, it meant this.
Well,
like,
I ask because for some people, like, that's the thing where they're like, I can't get into this movie. Like, like for some people, it's a tonal dissonance. And I think that the juxtaposition works. Mm-hmm. But I do remember watching it in middle school and going, this is weird and wrong.
No, I liked it. The tonal dissonance makes sense for what they're going for.
Yes. And I think it also makes sense once you've gone through that season of life. Mm-hmm. You were talking about this too, that, like, you know, never having been in this position, never having had any kind of degree of luxury in life, you can still watch some of these parties and be like, gosh, that's so relatable. That, you know,
the part where she's running through the field with her friends so they can go watch the sunrise after a night of partying. And I remember being, you know, 20, 21, and, like, running up the railroad tracks at UGA in the middle of the night and being a little more drunk than I should have been and, you know, looking at the stars and feeling like I was gonna live forever, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It was so relatable. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I get this. Like, I know what this feels like. I've been there. I've been that kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really, really liked that part. And I don't hate how relatable Marie Antoinette was, you know? I think there's a fine line. I think Marie Antoinette was... Here's why I'm not that mad at Marie Antoinette. You know, like, there are a lot of rich people who could do some good in the world, and they don't. Marie Antoinette was a child when she started. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she... I hate to say that she didn't know better. Like, she could have learned better. She probably should have made some changes as she grew up. But I don't know if it would have mattered, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Louis made some poor decisions, unfortunately, you know? And, I mean, as an American, like, I don't know that I can be too mad about his decisions.
Yay, we have a country!
Woo! I don't know. I mean... I think the criticisms about how, like, this film doesn't address any of the issues are simultaneously valid and stuck up. Like, yes, this film does not address the way that the poor were treated and how they were living. It doesn't really address the, like, political unrest. It barely touches on the politics of Versailles. Other than, like, the cultural politics.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still not that mad at it, because I think what this film does is it shows us Marie Antoinette as a person. And, yes, it's kind of a caricature of Marie Antoinette, but kind of like I said before we started watching, like, I think Marie Antoinette is hated more so than almost any figure in the French Revolution because she was a rich woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's unfair to the degree that she was hated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact she was an Austrian, she was an immigrant. She was othered. And I think it's easy to just say that someone who, you know, is different is evil.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about this film is it shows you, like, no, you know, like, you know, the mob, the revolutionaries, like, they knew, they had a version of her, mm-hmm, in their head, and it doesn't, it's not completely wrong, but it's not completely right either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's good to show a side of the story where maybe Marie Antoinette was a complex person, and maybe none of us is wholly good or wholly bad, you know, and she didn't deserve, I don't think she deserved what happened, you know,
mm-hmm,
and I think it's okay to, you know, have that take. But then at the same time, I'm like, but she's still complicit in the suffering of her people.
Yeah.
Like, she should have helped. I think the complexity of history is that both of those things can be true.
Yeah.
She can be a child who was forced into a responsibility she wasn't ready for, who had what felt like the weight of the world on her shoulders, who made poor decisions because she felt stifled and it was a release, and who also should have grown up but didn't. Mm-hmm. So
I will say, this is my third or fourth time seeing this film, and watching it through the lens of she is a woman who is made an object even more so than other women. I think this movie did a good job of that, of like, there's the only scenes we have of her where she's alone, she tends to like dominate the frame.
Yeah.
And then it'll tend to like slowly pull back and show her being very small, so like you feel that isolation. But then every other shot, she's constantly being watched. Even when she is small in a frame, there'll be like guards in the background or people walking behind her. Like, she's never truly she's just always being watched. I think she gets a little bit of respite when they have like the Trianon sequence or whatever, mm-hmm. when she gets a little cottagecore vibe, and you understand why that's what she's going for, though, because she's been just constantly being observed. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was more what the film was focused on.
Yeah.
But I think I think it does that well.
Yeah. Definitely would recommend. I know it won't be everyone's cup of tea.
No. But what would you give it as your final scoring?
9 out of 10 macarons.
Mm, interesting. I was going to give it 4 out of 5 fancy pairs of shoes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some pretty shoes in here. Those fur shoes, dude. Yes. Those and fur shoes.
They were like checkered blue ones. They're striped blue. Those were so cute.
Yeah. There are also some bright yellow ones. Mm-hmm. I just need like a photo set of all the shoes from this movie. Shoes. Oh my gosh.
But
well, that is my second costume drama. I am happy this one went over well. You showed me friggin' Quest for Camelot last week. I just censored myself. What are you showing me next on the animated fantasy train?
Slightly better. I'm going to be showing you The Black Cauldron.
Which I have never seen.
It is Disney's biggest flop.
I know it's Disney's biggest financial flop, but mm-hmm. I genuinely don't know anything about the movie.
It's a cult classic. People who love it, love it. To me, it's Disney's scariest movie.
So, I will go ahead and say that I'm already anticipating it being more than just a little bit better than Quest for Camelot.
It's a lot better than Quest for Camelot.
Because
Quest for Camelot set the bar so low.
Quest for Camelot is the worst movie you've shown me, and I have no problem saying that.
Even worse than Last Unicorn?
Yo, yeah. Like, way worse.
Okay.
The Last Unicorn wasn't my cup of tea, but like,
you could like appreciate it.
But like, I get why it's a cult classic. Mm-hmm. The Last Unicorn was just bad. Not The Last Unicorn, I'm sorry. Quest for Camelot was just bad. It was just bad.
You know, that's the thing, is I love it, but it is so bad. And I know that it's bad. It's absolute garbage. And even when I watch it, there's some parts where I like fast forward through or whatever. I just get to like Wesley. My sweet Wesley, what have I done? I just get to his parts and then I'm like, sexy boy. And then that's the only part I care about. Anyways, this movie is a lot better. I will tell you, I'm going to give you a little spoiler. So my favorite thing about this film is there's this little gremlin, fluffy character.
Oh, yeah, I've seen... Okay, so weirdly, I've seen, like, the beginning of the Black Cauldron, but I never finished it. So I know who Gurky is.
Yes, so...
And it's like your spirit animal.
Yes. For those of you who... So y'all have heard Zoe in the background. If you want to know what my dog looks like, Google Gurky Black Cauldron. And that is exactly what my dog looks like.
Yep.
Sometimes we call her Gurgi or the Gurgi. She's a Gurgi. Like, that's all I can say. So I definitely love that element of it. It's
mm-hmm.
I think you will have a similar reaction to the reactions that you had for most of the 80s fantasy I have mm-hmm. shown you. Because the Black Cauldron, at its core, is Disney's attempt at 80s fantasy, and it didn't go that well.
Right.
So, you know, take it with a grain of salt.
Well, I will let you know.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well... I ate more food than I have in a long time tonight, and there's still, like, a half a cheese board in front of us. So.
It felt very Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel kind of bad now, if I'm honest. I ate so much cheese, y'all.
Yeah. We let no one eat cake. Absolutely no one.
Oh, God. Seriously, my stomach is, like... It feels like there's a rock in it. But it's not a rock, it's half a block of cheese.
Maybe next week we'll just do, like, apples and hard bread.
Yeah.
Tied in a traveling cloth something.
Yeah, yeah. That's the vibe next week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Until then. Eat some cake, I guess. And,
take a bath in a long nightgown? We didn't talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. Go live your royalty core fantasy and woo!
That's my core.
Yeah.
You got your cottage core vibe, I got my royalty core vibe.
This movie was literally like the two of us in one.
Yes.
It's great.
Yes.
But yeah. Love y'all. Have a good week.
Au revoir.
Bye. Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at Liv and Lizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trashy you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!